This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Taking a look at the issues surrounding the health and well-being of our LGBTIQ plus communities. This is Well Well Well, brought to you by the team from Thorn Harbour Health on Joy and the Community Radio Network.
Here on Well Well Well, we delve into the issues impacting and surrounding the health and well-being of our gender, sex and sexuality diverse communities. Coming to you from Joy's Victorian Pride Centre studios on Boonwurrung Country, I'm your host Jack Ranjan, and joined in studio this week by Rachel Cook. Hello, Rachel.
Hello there, Jack. Lovely to be here.
Trans Day Visibility is on the 31st of March. It's just around the corner. We're going to be speaking with Tamsin Anspark, the South Australian LGBTIQ plus community advocate who is has quite a long resume, I'm going to be completely honest, but they are on the board of the South Australian Rainbow Advocacy Alliance, the Youth Affairs Council, and most recently, Thorn Harbour Health. We'll be speaking with Tamsin a little bit later in the show. That's all coming up this episode on Well, Well, Well.
From HIV to COVID-19, STIs and everything in between, you're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy and the Community Radio Network.
Here on Well, 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 you're in the studio with Jack and Rachel, and we're now joined on the phone by Tamsin Anspark, or Ansparch, a name that has been, I believe, thoroughly anglicized. What is the word that you used, Tamsin?
Anglicised,
goodness. You feel like you should be in the studio more than me. South Australian LGBTIQ plus community advocate. Thank you for joining us on the show. You've been involved in quite a number of community organisations. You've been in a lot of voluntary board positions. Some of them include on the board of the South Australian Rainbow Advocacy Committee, the Youth Affairs Council of South Australia, and more recently Thorn Harbour Health. For people who aren't aware, and to be honest, I'm one of them, what's it like to be in a voluntary board position? What does that often involve?
Well, it's, number one, it's always amazing, but it really depends on what sort of organisation you're volunteering for. Obviously, recently joining the board of Thorn Harbour Health, Thorn Harbour Health has quite a hefty budget and a lot of staff. And so the board really just sits in that governance area, which is traditionally when people think of boards, they think of government. So the strategy, managing risk, ensuring that, you know, the financial situation is all good. In smaller organisations like YACSA and SARA, where, you know, there's a lot less funding and, you know, a lot less staff, sometimes, you know, the board dips their toes into the operations, whether it's, you know, rocking up at events and helping out and just being a sounding board for operational matters. So it's quite different. But how I got into where I'm at now with, you know, sitting on multiple boards is when I was at university, I became women's officer on the SRC, and then I became a board member of the student union. And that was an amazing period where I really vocalised my values, but I also learned that services, activism, everything that, you know, community organisations, not-for-profits do, we actually need organisations to exist for those things to happen. So that's where I realised, hey, I'm a bit of a nerd and, you know, I don't mind finance and I don't mind these things. I can play a role in ensuring that the organisations that I care about are sustainable, are being managed appropriately and can exist so that they can do the work that needs to happen.
And what are some of the challenges in balancing your involvement in all of these different organisations? Like, have there been instances where knowledge to come from one organisation's work has benefited another through your involvement?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I obviously, you know, there's some times where it's like I'm wearing a YACSA hat or I'm wearing a Thorn Harbour hat when I'm in a certain room. But otherwise, it all is all interconnected and it's all connected to the values that I believe in for a better future. And I guess I'm not a normal person where I would say that my involvement in boards is actually one of my hobbies, you know, so it, although it does take up quite a bit of time, rather than, you know, sport or something like that, I'm, you know, going to a board meeting.
The South Australian government is currently considering introducing a human rights charter. Given your background in governance and advocacy, what are your thoughts on this?
This would be really important if, it's really important that a human rights framework is set up in South Australia. IACSA and SARA were both a part of 150 organisations that were calling on the government last year to initiate this inquiry. So currently an inquiry is being undertaken by the Social Development Committee in the Legislative Council. Submissions have been put in by IACSA, SARA and Thorn Harbour Health, outlining why this would be important in South Australia amongst a whole bunch of other organisations. To break it down, really, it would be impactful on mainly two levels. Number one, it would ensure that all legislation before the Parliament has the human rights lens applied to it. That's the obligations we have under our international human rights commitments. Now, currently that doesn't happen, and without that lens, we don't have the protective factor of human rights applied to legislation when it is moved in Parliament. And also, going into the future, having that ability to have that lens on it will be important when we revisit old legislation to ensure that it is in line with its human rights across all marginalised people. On the other side is the ability for there to be a complaints mechanism. And, you know, one example I could have for why that would be important: in 2016, we had some amendments to the Birth, Deaths and Marriages Act, which were amazing. South Australia became the first state to remove the surgery requirement for someone to change their sex and or gender identity on their birth certificate. But then there was an issue in the initial implementation of that, where the registrar decided that a doctor's letter had to have an authorised witness, which meant getting a JP or a lawyer to a doctor's office to witness a doctor signing off that, yes, this person identifies as this gender. Now, we were, at the time, we were able to get in the room and say, hey, this policy, how you're implementing this legislation is actually hurting people and means that people can't actually access changing their gender identity on their birth certificate. And, you know, it was changed, but in situations where regulation or policy is out of step with legislation, or where there are blatant abuses of human rights, then there is a proper mechanism to fall back on and ensure that people aren't falling through cracks. And right now that is the situation in South Australia, where there are cracks, people can fall through them, and there is no mechanism for redress.
I guess that's a consideration that we should be made in, you know, in the potential South Australian Human Rights Charter, in the interest of our LGBTIQ plus communities. Are there any other considerations that you'd want to be made into this, specifically for trans and gender diverse people?
Gender identity, intersex status, sexual orientation, all those characteristics need to be captured in what the legislation covers. But I can see this having really practical, positive outcomes, particularly for the trans and gender diverse community. I'm particularly thinking about a lot of issues that maybe happen with smaller businesses and organisations. Say, you know, before you came out, when you had a different name, you got a diploma from a registered training organisation, you're now trying to seek work, and the fact that you have a different name on that diploma is a barrier for you to accessing work. And if that organisation, you know, declines to update your diploma, this could be an avenue where someone gets that resolved.
Tamsin, before this interview, we spoke briefly about the limited community capacity in South Australia. That's within our LGBTIQ plus communities, but also, given in light of trans day visibility, trans and gender diverse communities, what are some of the impacts on queer leadership and the burden of visibility?
Yeah, look, we've got an amazing, vibrant community here in South Australia, but we also do experience something which I'm sure communities in regional Victoria may understand, in that sometimes the most well-off in our community do leave the state for better opportunities on the, particularly the East Coast. And I think that reality of people with, you know, economic mobility, with more socioeconomic power, leaving the state does change the dynamic in South Australia. And it also means that there is slightly less resourcing for our community among our community. We're also, particularly as a member of the trans community, we are now facing a time where anti-trans activists, you know, are watching what we do online, are very comfortable with sharing people's private information.
Tamsin, before this interview, we spoke briefly about the limited community capacity in South Australia. I guess, what are some of the impacts on queer leadership and the burden of visibility that either you've experienced yourself or you've seen elsewhere in the community?
We see in South Australia a phenomenon which, you know, some of your listeners in regional Victoria might understand, where people leave South Australia for bigger and brighter opportunities on the eastern states. And, you know, there's some people like me that choose to stay in South Australia because we have a beautiful, vibrant community. But we do experience, you know, some people that, particularly those who take up leadership positions, then moving out of the state. So what that I've seen is there's a smaller group of people who are actually in the position to be visible and to step up. And therefore in South Australia, there's a lot of burnout that happens. There's a lot of great people that are doing great work, but they are having to, you know, make a lot of sacrifices to do what they do for the community. And, you know, as I'm sure you can understand, that is, you know, it's unsustainable, not only for them, but for the community. So a lot of conversations that I'm having right now is how we build community capacity so that going forward, we can have a more robust community where there's a stronger pathway for leaders coming through, and that nothing is ever on one person's shoulders. And then in terms of visibility, where post-marriage equality, and particularly as of late with the politicisation of gender-affirming care, we are seeing a more unsafe environment for particularly trans and gender diverse people to be visible in community and to speak up, particularly in the digital world, where anti-trans activists are more than happy to take screenshots and to share people's most intimate details with the world. And, you know, there's a lot of benefits to visibility, but there are these new challenges that we as a community need to face, and how we protect each other when people are visible.
Do you think that people in... this is something that we had discussed again before this interview. Although, I mean, you mentioned that folk with that economic mobility, with potentially greater socioeconomic status, might be more inclined to leave South Australia. Do you think that queer leadership, or indeed government, is aware of what might be greater vulnerabilities or challenges for the trans and gender diverse communities that remain? Do you think that people are aware of that reality?
Look, I hope so, and it's something I'm passionate about. I think more and more, as we get some of the big wins that we have had as a broader community, we now need to apply slightly different lenses to how we're looking at how we're supporting each other and what we need to achieve next. And I think that socioeconomic lens is incredibly important, particularly in the issue of access to healthcare. I think there are drastically different outcomes based off of someone's socioeconomic in how they access gender-affirming care in South Australia. And, you know, that's not right. Everyone should be able to access gender affirming care, no matter their income, no matter their background. So I think across all the work we do as a community, we need to be more mindful of how income, how wealth, how background impacts or intersects with queer identity.
Trans Day Visibility has always been a great way to bring attention to the trans and gender diverse communities. Given your personal and professional experience, what does Trans Day Visibility mean to you?
Yeah, I've had a very interesting relationship, as I'm sure all trans people have, with Trans Day of Visibility. I've had years where I've, you know, wanted to yell from the rooftops, and I've had years where I just want to stay in bed all day. What I think is powerful about Trans Day of Visibility is it is an opportunity for members of the broader community to show allyship with the trans community. I think intra-community allyship is something that we need to be speaking more about, because unfortunately there are people trying to divide us. There are people trying to cut lines between the letters in the acronym to weaken us and to harm us and to pit us against each other. And I think that would be detrimental for all of us. So when I think of Trans Day of Visibility, I think of the allyship that I get when I make my fiery Facebook posts, when I, you know, when I get support from the people in my life who are community members who aren't trans, and the power in that, in them supporting my visibility.
How is Trans Day Visibility being celebrated in Adelaide? And how has a potential lack of events in the past affected trans and gender diverse folk?
Yeah, well, it looks like this year we're not going to have an event in Adelaide, which is unfortunate. And I think ties back to that work we need to do in building community capacity. We have had events over the last several years, but it's an ongoing issue we face in terms of having the capacity to, you know, organise an event. I know it sounds pretty simple, but if anyone's ever worked in event coordination, it is a bit of work. And this year, particularly in South Australia, I feel like we've been in a space where we've had to be quite responsive to things that have been coming up. So the community hasn't necessarily been able to be proactive. So I'm hoping that going forward, we can work on that capacity issue and ensure that all our significant days are marked by events where the community can come together.
And how do you think that lack of events affects the TGD folk? You know, I mean, there's the obvious sort of answers, like, you know, not being able to come together, but I think there's probably deeper impacts than that.
Yeah, I do think it does sort of, it doesn't help the morale. And it doesn't, you know, this in South Australia, thankfully, we do have quite strong online communities, but Trans Day of Visibility might be someone's first event where they come together and meet another trans person in person. So it's a big loss of opportunity for connection and for supporting the well-being of the community.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you have for any young trans people listening that have aspirations for leadership in potentially similar ways to you've seen in your experience?
Well, I feel like I've maybe been a bit negative in the interview so far, but, you know, there are some stark realities we're facing, but life is so good. If you are ever questioning yourself and whether you should go for something, I would always encourage you to say yes, because there are opportunities out there for you and you can achieve whatever you put your mind to. I myself suffer really horribly from imposter syndrome. So I always feel like I'm never meant to be in the room, but I'm thankfully aware of that. So I always try and push into the room, but I'd tell young trans people listening to just not give up. And also that leadership isn't necessarily holding a title or being the top of a hierarchy. In a collective, everyone can demonstrate leadership. Leadership can just be you showing up at every community event and ensuring that if someone needs help, that you're there to help them. There are so many ways for you to find where you can be a leader, and I encourage you to explore that.
There's about three really golden pieces of advice there. Amazing, especially the part about imposter syndrome. What are some of the ways to showcase the work of trans and gender diverse folk, not just on Trans Day of Visibility, but throughout the year?
Yeah, I think I'll come back to the point about intra-community allyship there, where I think more and more we need to, de-burden specifically trans folk themselves with the responsibility of highlighting that trans people exist and trans people are doing things, and as a broader community, creating space for the visibility of that throughout the year.
And you spoke a little bit about the difficulties in running events in light of Trans Day Visibility this year, but also in previous years. Beyond the event itself, what does the future of Trans Day Visibility look like to you, and how do you think we might get there? Which this may well include that sort of intra-community allyship as well.
Yes, well, number one, I'm hoping next year we will have a fantastic event in South Australia, and I am setting myself that goal. But I think going forward, what I hope is that when we look at trans visibility, we do get a broader idea of what the trans community is. I think sometimes, again, going back, it's the people with the most privilege in the community that are the most visible. But I think we need to show all aspects of our community. And I think over time, we're getting better at that. And I hope we continue to show the diversity within the diversity within the diversity within the diversity that exists within us.
Tamsin, SA-based LGBTIQ plus community advocate, board member of South Australian Rainbow Advocacy Committee, Youth Affairs Council of South Australia, and recent Thorn Harbour Health board member edition. Thank you so much for joining us on Well, 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 and hope you have a fantastic Trans Day Visibility.
Thank you. You too.
That is all we have time for on this episode of Well, Well, Well. Thank you again to our guests for joining us. If you missed part of this episode or want to catch up on previous episodes, you can head to the Joy website, joy.org.au/well, to download the podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions for topics for us to discuss on future episodes, you can send those through to well@joy.org.au. But that is about it. Rachel, thank you for joining me in studio.
It's been absolutely lovely.
Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to Well, 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 supported by Thorn Harbour Health on Joy and the Community Radio Network. For more LGBTIQ plus health and wellbeing and much more, check out Thorn Harbour on social media at Thorn Harbour or via the website thornharbour.org.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.